This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome to a beautiful weekend, it looks like so far. Maybe a little bit on the warm side it'll be, but hey,
yeah,
that's great for working outside, isn't it?
You bet.
I'm Igor. With me as always, Master Gardener Bob Harris, and our phone lines always open to you. We are live, so if you want to have a question to ask the Master Gardener, 814-368-9372. And we also have our email, garden@wesb.com. And we do have a question there. I don't know if you wanted to start with that or if
sure.
you want to come back to it later on.
No, let's start with that.
All right. And I'm also logging on to Facebook Live as we speak as well. And Bob did bring some show and tell, so we'll get to
you
that
bet. Yeah.
In just a little bit. All right. So who writes to us today on the email? It's Kathleen. And she says, greetings. How do I know what bushes or flowering plants will need covered for winter?
Oh, good question. If you've bought them locally, chances are they don't need any protection. But a lot of us buy some plants out of town or from a different source than a greenhouse or a nursery. And some of those may need protection. Now, hopefully you saved the tag, and on the back of the tag, it'll say what zone they're for. And we're in a zone 5, A, and that's close to a zone 4. So if you get something that's a zone 5B or a 6 or 7, the higher the number, the less it will have the ability to survive our winters.
What about the lower zones?
Lower zones, they'll survive with no problem. The lower the zone, the colder the winter it can withstand.
Oh, neat. Okay.
And every zone is 10 degrees in temperature.
I never knew how that worked. I knew that there were zones, but I didn't know what it meant.
So our zone 5A, not 5B, but 5A, is we can get down to a minus 20 degrees. Any plant that's able to withstand that is good for Bradford. Now, if it can only get down to 30 or 25 degrees, it's probably going to need a little protection. Now, you can do the protection different ways. One is by the choice of the location. Putting the plant in an area where the wind won't blow through it, the winter wind. Not the summer wind, but the winter wind, because that's what usually damages a plant. The winter wind sometimes can be very dry, and so they do what we call desiccate a plant. That's as the wind blows through it, it's dry air, and it pulls the moisture out of the plant. And, of course, then the plant can't survive, or part of it can't. Another one is protection from the very extreme colds in the root system. Now, normally a good layer of mulch will help protect that. That insulates the soil so it doesn't freeze so hard and so deep. But we have to be more concerned in a winter with freeze and thaw. If we have a tender plant that is susceptible to that, you know, we get the freeze and thaw in the winter where we get a real cold night, drops down to 20, but then during the day, it might get over freezing. So the plant can freeze and thaw. And as that happens, that can damage the cells in a plant and eventually, you know, even kill off a plant. So by wrapping those plants, we can protect them from that freeze and thaw by adding that shade. You know, I like to wrap with burlap at Breezewell, but it puts a little bit of shade in there so when the sun comes out, it doesn't heat up as quickly, so the plant has a chance to survive well that way. So the best way is to look it up on the internet, or if you've saved the tag, look there and see if it's a zone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. those are good zones for us.
Awesome. Kathy does have a second part to this question, too. And I don't know how to pronounce that. Mandeville? She wants to know if she could keep her Mandeville,
yeah,
geraniums, and hibiscus. In the she says she has a garage that's about 45 degrees all winter. Can she keep those in the garage?
Yes. Yes, indeed, you can. It's a common practice for all those. Even the geranium makes a great houseplant. You can do a little bit of cutting back, reduce its height by half, and it'll make a nice houseplant. The hibiscus and the mandeville, you can keep them in the garage, but you may have to add a little light to it, you know, if you don't have any window shining in there, and they will survive that very well too. You have to keep track of the watering, let them dry out totally before you rewater, and try to keep mice and rodents, you know, away from them if they're in that garage there too. So you can keep those plants with no trouble at all.
You have to let them all dry out all the way, you say?
Yeah, let them dry out and then before you rewater, because if you keep the soil damp in those kind of conditions, it will develop fungus in it, and of course that will eventually harm the plant.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, great. Hey, that's a great email. And Kathy says, I love the garden show. Yay!
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for writing in, Kathy. That's garden@wesb.com if you'd like to write in. And we're streaming on Facebook Live right now, so you can also make a comment there, and we'll see it and read it and answer whatever questions you might have.
You want to talk about what I got beside me? Is this plant?
That looks like a mini Christmas tree.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, put it on over closer to the camera over here. Facebook.com/WESB1075. Yeah, that's a nice looking.
It is indeed. This is Alberta dwarf spruce, and it's interesting. It's a dwarf plant. It's what usually grows around 4 to 6 foot. Mm. Now, I have seen them 10 foot and over, but normally it stays real short. It only grows like an inch a year. It's evergreen, and it likes this area. It's good for zone 3.
Oh,
so
my.
Much colder than Bradford even, so it can survive very easily here in Bradford. Now, it can tend to, you get a certain winter where there are lots of dry winds, it can brown up, but given enough time, come May and June, it'll start to regreen. So it's a good plant for Bradford. Again, a dwarf Alberta spruce. But what's interesting to me about it is it's comes from a regular spruce tree, those ones that can grow over 100 foot tall. And part of that plant mutated way back. I can't remember the exact time that these were put into production. It was in the 1800s. When there was a lot of plant collectors around the earth. And he noticed funny growth at the top of some spruce trees. And so he climbed the tree and cut off that piece, took it home and rooted it, and got this into production over the years. Now, there was times when a lot of plant collectors, a lot of our dwarfs came from this way, would just drive the highways in America in the 1800s or early 1900s. If they saw an unusual growth up in a tree, sometimes they would just shoot it out rather than climb the tree. Because most of the time this happens way at the top of the tree.
Wow.
Yeah.
Work smart, not hard. Well, don't climb it. Just shoot it down.
Yeah. And so we got a lot of our dwarf plants that way. Along with the Alberta dwarf spruce, we also have the Mugo pine. That's another one that came from a very tall growing, 100-foot-plus tall tree, but now only grows to three feet maybe. That's it. What has happened, the original tree has mutated, and this always interests me, mutated by the genes changed. You know, a lot of scientists get confused to saying, you know, the genes, once you have your genes inside you, that's what you're with the rest of your life. But weather conditions, usually it's weather conditions, they think, can make the genes change, and they have in these particular shrubs, to the point where all of a sudden they became a dwarf rather than the full-size tree. Now, it is known, too, that if we get an unusual winter again, that in our Alberta spruce, all of a sudden we can get a large growth coming out of it, usually just one branch, where it is mutated back to its mother plant. And, of course, we'll want to just trim that off, and the rest of the plant will be fine. But it's pretty interesting how plants can mutate like that.
I like that. I thought it was just a mad scientist or something like that in a lab that created this, but
no, they do now by forcing the mutations.
Sure.
But back then, when these were discovered, it was all nature that did it.
Found it in the wild and planted it, and
yeah.
Neat.
And became very popular because people like the looks of it. It continues to grow, doesn't really need trimming at all. Continues to grow in that nice conical habit.
Oh, you don't have to shape it or anything?
Nope, you don't have to shape it. Mm-hmm. Now, they do take the shaping very easily. They can be trimmed and really shows no harm to the plant by trimming it any way you want to. They make good topiary plants where you can trim it into little balls or squares or whatever you want, or even into animals. So that makes it interesting, too. But that's the dwarf plant, and that kind of leads me to the rest of the show. I wanted to talk about some of the different plants in the world.
Now, these dwarf Alberta spruces, are these best away from the house? Can you put these close?
You can put these real close because they also the roots are dwarfed also.
Okay, yeah, so the roots don't get invasive or anything like that or mess
not at
with
all.
Your foundation. Yeah, good.
They even make a nice container plant. If you don't want to put it in the ground, you're not sure where to grow it, just put it in a larger container and it'll be fine there.
You can move it wherever you want.
Yeah.
If you get tired of seeing it over here in this side of the house,
yep.
Move it over there.
Move it over there.
I like it. Okay.
So really neat plant, the dwarf Alberta spruce.
And before we get to the rest of your topic, let's thank our sponsor, W. Smith.
Good idea.
And then we'll continue on with the show. And, of course, we're always taking your phone calls, 814-368-9372. This is The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
Visit Worth W. Smith Company in Bradford and see all they have to offer for your outdoor cooking. You'll find a wide variety of mountain pie makers, bread makers, hot dog forks, and other fire pit cooking products. That's not your style. Don't worry, they didn't forget you. They have whatever cooking fuel you need, whether it's charcoal, propane, or one of several flavors of Bear Mountain wood pellets they have in stock. So next time you're looking for something for backyard cooking, remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company in Bradford.
And just like that, we return with more Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. And take it away, Bob.
Okay, I'm talking about mutations in plants, but also talking about just strange plants. And one in particular I think we all know about is the Venus flytrap.
Oh, yeah.
That's a plant that captures insects. The leaves close up around the insect, and it slowly digests it, and that becomes its food. Now, why did a plant mutate into such a thing? Because it decided that it would grow in an area that is really low in nutrients, that it's very difficult for a plant to grow. So it gets its nutrients from meat rather than from nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And it was a mid-1700s that it really became quite a question, because at that time, they finally discovered it. They grow in the swamps of Carolinas, so it's an American plant. And when they were discovered by some famous men, Collinson over in Europe and Bartran in America, He lived just below Philadelphia there. They were great plant hunters. They started looking at it. And, of course, a lot of the scientists said, absolutely no way. Plants cannot eat meat because then they are not a plant anymore. So there was a big discussion over that. And it went for decades and decades till someone really started digging into them and found out the whole process and why. And what it is it has a leaf shape that looks like an open purse, two blades of the leaf. And it has hairs inside that leaf. And if an insect would touch one hair, nothing happens. But once it touches a second hair or the same hair twice, the plant knows that the insect just didn't hit there or fly off, or a raindrop just didn't cause it to close, or a puff of wind. So then the plant knows that there is food there, and if I close up really quickly, and it happens very quickly, that they close up around that insect, that I'll have my next meal. Then it's a process, the whole chemical process causes this, and it's chemicals that really shouldn't be together. That's still a mystery to us. Yeah.
Wow.
And I can't remember the exact chemicals, but the first one causes an electrical current in the plant that causes the leaves to close. Then that shuts off, and all of a sudden the plant starts making enzymes that can digest the food that has landed in there. And it so it starts making those enzymes until everything is digested out of it. And then, of course, then it goes back to its normal, I guess you would say, normal being of mix of chemicals. And it continues to grow that way.
How often do they eat?
As often as an insect will land on there. Now, they don't absolutely have to have an insect land on them. They can get fertilizer out of the ground or the water also. So if you have one as a house plant, you know, and you don't have flies landing in it once in a while, that maybe you better put some plant food in there, because they can get nutrients that way. That's what's fascinating about it. It can feed one way or the other way.
Wow.
And so, of course, that confused scientists for decades and decades.
So you don't have to be like Seymour in the
Little
Shop of Horrors. You don't have to feed it meat every now and then.
You don't have to, no. So it'll continue to grow, and it will even flower and then reproduce and make more carnivorous plants.
I've only seen the little ones at, like, Walmart, you know, that they sell those little. Do they stay little, or do they eventually get, like, you know, big?
They can get bigger. Not much bigger, you know. They might get twice the size of what you'll buy there at Walmart.
I was just wondering if, like, you could fit your fist in there and it would
chew
on your fist.
No.
You know, no. Like, how big of a leaves or a mouth, if you will, you know, does this thing have?
So also, it's kind of interesting, too, when they first discovered it and started doing some scientific work with it. They didn't know what to name it, because it just didn't belong in the plant family, but it didn't belong in the animal family. So they gave it a funny name. They called it a tippy witchet.
Sure. Yeah. It's just as good as anything.
And then, of course, then it was named to a sensitive plant, and because of if you touch it, it would move. And then it eventually got its name that we use today, the Venus flytrap.
Because it belongs on another planet, because it's weird.
Yeah.
Venus.
But there are other ones, too. There are what we call the sundews, and there's a lot of different ones of that type, that on their leaves they have these little hairs, and at the end of each hair is a sticky substance that the plant produces, so that when a fly or some other little creature lands there, it gets stuck there.
Wow.
And then, of course, then they change their chemical makeup from that sticky, attractive fluid, sugary fluid, to a chemical of enzymes that start to digest that critter that got stuck in there. And that's the sundews. So they're both very interesting. Oh, and then there's the pitcher plant. I have some of them growing in my pond at home. They really interest me. they form a leaf that looks like a pitcher or a long funnel shape. And in that funnel will be liquid, and the outer part of the leaves will be kind of slippery. They have a waxy substance on it, so that when a fly or a bug lands on that leaf, because they're usually colorful too, the bug thinking that it's going to get some pollen or nectar. So they land there, and they slip and fall into that water. And of course, then that water turns into an enzyme where the plant can slowly digest it, and it gets its food that way. So they're just really interesting plants, and scientists are still delving into them, thinking, you know, where do they fit in the tree of life here?
Right. Wow. Yeah, that's neat. And can you are the one that you're describing in the pond? Is that like a specific? It has to be in water.
No, it doesn't have to be, but it'll have to be wet all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it'll have to have a chance to collect water in its funnel there,
mm-hmm.
Or pitcher, so that it can do its job of collecting insects that way.
Just wondering if that's like a common thing, you know, like, or do you, does one order that, you know, to get the seeds for that somewhere? Or
yeah, you can order the plants. Yep. Yep, they're out there, you know, in nurseries and greenhouses, or online you can order those plants, and they're, most of them are very, very colorful, so it makes them attractive to insects. Most of them are small plants, so they make a great house plant. They need high humidity though, lots of humidity. So be aware of that. But they're out there for sale. There's a number of different ones, and coming up with new ones all the time, too. They're just a fascinating plant.
Well, what I was wondering is if you can just get a bunch of these and kind of control the mosquito situation if you have.
Oh.
You know, I'm trying to, yeah.
To a point, yeah. But if I was going to keep them in the house, which we don't usually have a mosquito problem in the house.
Right.
it may be a good idea to keep them in like a terrarium or aquarium with a lid on it, where you can control the humidity to keep it really high. That's usually a good way to do it, unless you have a little greenhouse or a sunroom that has high humidity. Then those places are good also. But neat plants and fascinating to think about, and still a lot of studies to be done on them.
Very cool. Hey, our phone lines are open. We're going to go a couple more minutes because we're a couple of minutes late. So if you'd like to have a question for Bob before we get out of here, it's 814-368-9372. Our email, garden@wesb.com, and we're on Facebook Live as well.
Oh, another – I wanted to talk about another fascinating plant.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
And this one was discovered not long ago. It's been known about, but they really didn't know all the facts about it. And I can't pronounce the name, but it's a South American plant. It's a vine. It's a vine. And it changes its leaves to suit whatever it's climbing on. So if it's climbing, first of all, from the ground up onto a bush, its leaves mimic the leaves of the bush. So you can't tell the vine is there.
Wow, that's neat.
And then once it gets taller and latches onto a tree, then the leaves change again to match the leaves that are on the tree. So it mimics whatever it's creeping up. So it really disguises itself in that way. And scientists are still trying to figure out how it's doing this and also why it's doing it. Now, they think that there are scents coming off certain plants, one way of thinking about it, called pheromones that we can't smell, but plants can. And that's a known fact. Plants can smell smells we don't. And they think they are collecting those pheromones to mimic the plant that they're attached to.
I see this online. I understand why.
Oh, there it is. Yeah.
Why you can't pronounce that.
Yeah.
Boquilla trifoliata. Foliolata.
Yeah.
Sure.
Good enough.
Go with that one, yeah. Now, how often do they change the leaves, though? Like, because that has to take a lot of energy, doesn't it?
It does take a lot of energy, yes. As soon as they attach to another plant, which that's their whole goal in life, is to attach to another plant.
Oh, so they do like pretty much one transformation because it's whatever plant they're near.
No, they can do more than one transformation.
Wow.
Say there's a shrub down below, they'll form that part of the plant to match the leaves of that shrub. And then once they continue to grow, they're looking for more sunlight. So all vines like to grow up into the sun. And then once it gets above that shrub and attaches to a tree, if there's one there, then that part of the plant mimics the leaves of the tree. So it's always been very difficult for scientists to find it because mimics the plant that it's on. And one of the biggest mysteries, and this was done in the mid-1900s. One woman there, she spent a whole lifetime in South America, I think in Argentina, looking for this plant to see its flower, because it was reported that it does flower. But it only flowers one day out of the year.
Oh, wow.
And it's on a full moon.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And so
at least that narrows it down.
It narrows it down. Now, she didn't know this. It took many, many years. Finally, she was able to get the locals to explain about that plant and how it reacted to that one day a year. For only one day it blooms, too, and during a full moon. So they still have some information to get out of it, but they think it's pollinated by what we call a night-flying hawk moth. That's the only thing that can pollinate it.
Wow.
Which, in our area, we have the yuccas that flower, it's they're only pollinated at night too. Now we don't have any hawk moths, or not too many hawk moths here, but bats can also pollinate the plant so that they can produce seed and keep going. So she spent a whole lifetime. She finally did find the plant. She did see the flower, and of course she was a painter, so she painted it, and it's a very famous painting now. And I wish I could remember her name. She was a neat lady, because a real botanical illustrator and plant hunter.
I was going to say, you know, how is she making money if she's just staying, looking at plants?
Oh, by her paintings.
Her whole life.
Yeah.
Waiting for this flower.
Yeah. By
Does
her
that
paintings.
Pay a lot?
Yeah. And the fascinating part, too, is like the yucca plant. It flowers during that full moon, so it doesn't flower in the day. And then it gives off a large puff of scent. And, of course, the moth is attracted to that flowery scent, same as our yucca. Most people kind of miss out on it. It's kind of a Adam's needle, they also call them around here. But it'll only give off that perfume late at night during most of the time during the full moon.
Very cool. Hey, we're all out of time.
Oh, okay.
All out. So thank you for everybody that we were having a phone call trying to get in too. So try to call back next week, or if you could call us again off the air, we can answer your question there.
Yeah.
But we will be back next week, The Gardening Show on WESB. Have a great weekend, Bob.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.